Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. I got fury in my soul. Fury gonna take me to that glory goal. In my mind, I can't study war no more.
Save the people, save the children, save the country, save the country.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Curtain. This is Paul Listick. Boy, do we got a special guest for you to listen to today. And as you heard that CD, it's of a song called Save the Country. And you heard phrases like, you know, no more time for war. We got to save the planet. We got to save the country. And that is the theme of this song that pulls together actually some a couple of songs from yesteryear, actually, into this incredible new release by my guest. You know her from Broadway. You know her from television and stage and movies and everything else. Rosalind Kine. Rosie joins me on the podcast. Interviewed you on WGN Radio Live, and now we get to do a podcast. Rosie, thank you.
Oh, my God. That's so exciting. But for a podcast, don't you usually need it to be on camera?
Sure. Well, we can, you're being recorded. You just don't know it.
Oh, okay. No. There's a camera in my house.
No, we've stuck some cameras in. And I love, oh, and I also have to toss in, because you are an incredible star in your own right, but it's sort of worth mentioning, you have a sister that some people have heard of, and that is Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys get along, right? I mean, like, do you get together and just sit and sing
yeah.
all the time?
No, we've never done that. As kids, my sister taught me to harmonize.
Ah.
She taught me to harmonize when I was a baby on Row, Row, Row Your Boat. But we never really, until 2012, we never really sang together in public.
Ah, and you did, and I saw you, and it was amazing. Uh-huh. Oh, you know what I've never told you before?
That
what? I spent some time with your mom, with Diana.
You did? When was
I did.
This?
It was at Barbara's first farewell concert in 1994 in Vegas. I flew out from Chicago to catch both shows, spending a fortune on the tickets.
Uh-huh.
And what happened was, the first night, I didn't have the greatest seats, even though I should have. So this house manager mm-hmm. kind of recognized me, whatever, and he handed me a couple of tickets. And I thought he was a house manager. And he said, here, enjoy the show. And he ended up, he gave us main floor. I sat with your mom.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was
how
so wonderful.
Serendipitous.
Yeah, and so that was really cool. And then I actually tried to sneak up to the party afterwards where your mom was there and stuff, and nobody threw me out, but I was very polite.
I was there too.
Oh,
maybe
my God.
I hadn't gotten there yet.
I love it.
I was there in 94.
Well,
I
love reminiscing, and we'll do a little more of that. But first, I want to talk about Save the Country. What a great beat. Mm-hmm. But for folks who might be younger than you and me, talk a little bit mm-hmm. about, because this is actually some Laura Nyro music. We've heard these songs
yeah.
before in a different way. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, it was from the 70s when Laura originally did the recording herself, and it was during a time of chaos, during the Vietnam War and the college kids picketing and everything. And there was quite a bit of unrest. And she did this song, and she did it with, there's a recording where she just did it with piano, where she did it, and then she had an arrangement. And a lot of other artists picked it up. It was very, you know, right for the times. And when I had recorded it I never recorded it. I did it live in my show. I did a New Age show back in 1990. And I put it in my show because I was trying to bring people. We were going through some stuff then, and I was trying to put people together. I just want harmony in the world, you know?
Yeah.
And so in my New Age show, it was about, you know, one-on-one love, one love with yourself, with another, you know, with groups, with countries. I just wanted everybody to come together. It was a little before its time. And
I liked it then, but I just think a little before its time, but I think, or maybe another way to word it, it served its purpose then, but it's serving a whole new purpose now with your new recording.
Oh, it's a different purpose. No, for when Laura Nyro put it out, and then there were other groups, and the Fifth Dimension was one of the most well-known recordings of it. And Paul Revere and the Raiders did. I mean, we listened to everybody's treatment arrangement-wise of this song, because we had to come up with something so different. But, this is what happened. With what's going on now, I walked into my producer's studio and I said, I have to cut this. I must record this. And we worked to make it so different. And even when we got stumped, we'd put it aside and work on another song and then come back to it when we were fresher. And we layered it and we brought in some guest musicians and we came up with this arrangement that brings in different treatments of songs, different genres in the music.
And of course,
and it made it very exciting.
And people can download this. I mean, it's on iTunes and Amazon and CD Baby. But
yes.
I watched it with the video version that went along with it. And that is just so powerful, too, because talk about the message of Save the Country, because you it must be a thing in your family, right? You're all sort of activists trying to make a difference in this world. Talk about the message you're trying to send with this song.
The message I'm trying to send with this song is that I want to bring people together. I want to get rid of the hate that exists. There's so much hate and fear. And the bottom line is, you know, we are all alike. We're all brothers and sisters. We have the same color blood, no matter what the skin color. We come from the same universal source above, whether you call it the universe or God or whatever. It's a higher presence, a higher vibration, and we all are attuned to that. We have that within each and every one of us. So I'm trying to say, let's look inside, let's do inner work and realize that there's nothing to fear. You know, I grew up in Brooklyn, which was a melting pot, and
right.
So I had all kinds of people in my neighborhood, and they all had different businesses, and there was so much culture learning from each other. You know, the different foods. If I didn't live in a melting pot city, I never would have learned to know that.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful to share the differences. I grew up learning to want to know people. I wanted to understand their religions. I wanted to understand who they were. And I just, you know, gave credence to the fact that we're all somewhat different, but we all have so much similarity. And there's no room for fear and hatred in this world. We can't have it.
You know,
and I just want people to look inside deeply and do that search within themselves.
And here's a question I've had, because this is these recent days are the first time you and I, we've gotten to talk and I interview you and all that. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I have your CD, Come What May, and I mean, I've always been an admirer of yours. You record beautiful songs and all of that. But this activist piece of you seems to be stronger now than it was in the past. First of all, is that true? And secondly, is it a reaction to the time we're living in?
Yes. Yes, I have never been an activist in my whole life until the 2016 election.
That turned you around.
That totally turned me around, and I knew I had to do my part in trying to help us come together, because it's not right to break us apart, and it's not right to create fear. And our country stands for values that are being destroyed, and I don't want to see that happen. I don't want people to be separated and hateful. I want us to come together in spite of our differences, to learn to love each other because of the differences, because of the similarities. We need to learn unconditional love. That is what we're here on this earth to learn.
What is your reaction? What is your reaction when people say to you, your sister gets it too, and so many celebrities who, you know, voice their opinion, Tom Hanks, pick your celebrity. So what do you mm-hmm. say when people feel like, you know what, you sing beautifully, whatever, you should just sing and don't give people your political views, to keep it off the stage. What do you think about that?
You know what? Everybody has a right to have a political view, even the man on the street.
I agree.
Everybody, my neighbor has a right to have a political view. We don't always have to agree with each other, but if we have in our hearts what we believe is right, we have the right to voice it. Everybody has a right to voice for their rights and for equality and for their faith and what, you know, to stand up and fight for your values. This country was accepting of all different peoples around the world. The Statue of Liberty says it when it was given to us by France. I mean, all of our history is based on people, immigrants coming here to make a better life. That hasn't changed. And I mean, years ago, we had a quota of what different people from how many can come in from each country. Maybe we just have to look at how we handle immigration differently. But the bottom line is, you know, most people I meet, and I remember being a girl on the line waiting to buy tickets for Hard Day's Night. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
The Beatle movie, the
sure.
first Beatle movie, and I was online with.
Although I have better, I have memories of Help more than I do of Hard Day's Night, but yes.
I befriended a black girl my own age, and we got to talking and everything, and I got to like her, and I ended up inviting her to my home. You know, I have all kinds of people in my life, and I, you know, everybody has a heart and a soul. God willing, there's a light within each and every one of us, and I want that to bring us together. I want the understanding of the greater good for all to be understood. And I'm hoping that with my little voice, maybe I can help make others, you know, also open up toward working toward the light.
Do you? You said this all happened in 2016. I understand that. Do you plan to work as 2020 is almost around the corner? Will we see? Because this comes out, are we going to see more from Roz Kyne? Making these.
Well, I have some other songs, but all my songs, Paul, are based in love.
Yeah,
they're based in love. They're not about breaking things up. They're about bringing together.
And we should
say that's what I'm about.
I know you are working on a CD that'll come out probably later this year. But between now and then, for huge fans of yours like me, we can just kind of check CD Baby and different places to see the singles that are coming out.
Yeah, I'll be releasing digital ones at a time until the whole thing is finished. Yeah.
Can you tell us what some of those songs? Can you share what some of the songs are?
Well, I believe that the next one I'm planning to put out, unless it changes, is the song that I wrote with my musical director, Michael Orland, and our friend Judy Quay. We wrote it in the 90s, and I did it in my shows, and I did it in my New Age show, but I never recorded it until now. It's called Light of Love. And it's about finding that love within yourself and, taking your path to find your greatest visions of value where, you can contribute and you find your worth. But also how that transpires to one-on-one. When you look in someone's eyes, it's like a mirror looking into your heart. And it's you and me giving light for all to see.
I find it fascinating.
It's all about the light. It's all about love.
It's like it's 25 or so years later after you've gone back to the Laura Nyro, so even farther back for Laura Nyro, and your songs that you wrote long ago. It's as though you woke up one day, maybe in 2016, and just said, what happened to yesterday? And you found these treasures, these gems, and you said, I need to bring these back.
Well, these always were there in my heart and soul. They were always there, and you could always do them because they're great songs, but there's a necessity for them today. There's definitely a necessity. And I have been regressed, and I was told that my purpose in this life is to heal. And I'm trying to follow my path for that purpose.
Do you think
not so much,
Well, I was going to say, it sounds like you have a lot of hope. I mean, 2020, there's a lot of people. Listen, if you're a Trump supporter, you're thrilled. You hope he stays around for four more years and whatever. If you're not a big Trump supporter, probably your category to be in. The hope is that there's a change in 2020. How much faith do you have in the American people that they'll see a light?
I have a lot of faith. I have a lot of faith. I don't know how much more, I would have thought more would have taken to it by now. But you know what? I have faith. I have a conscience, and I have, I'm patient.
Well, a great moment. I mean, as you're saying this, all I can think of is the importance of smiling through all this and trying to smile. And then I remembered that you and your sister, you joined her on stage for one of her tours around the country. And you also went back to the homeland. You were in Israel. And
yes,
it probably
Tel Aviv.
Is. Yes, in Tel Aviv. And so I have a bit of the recording, if you don't mind, of you and Barbara singing Smile together. And it warms me so much that with your permission, I'd like to just share it with listeners.
Of course. Please do, Paul.
Let's do it.
Just smile.
Do you guys realize that you have like two of the most incredible voices ever put on the planet?
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm going to hope that it's going to resonate to the vibration of the planet and help us all heal.
That's the goal. And I think it's so when I asked you the question a bit tongue in cheek about, what do you say when people say, oh, celebrities shouldn't do that. But the truth is, who else has a voice? We have to reach each other somehow.
Right. And music is a universal language, and people love music. And I just want to encourage people to have a voice. I'm not the only one that can have a voice. Each and every human being, each and every citizen in this country has a right to have a voice. New people have a right. The power of the people has to conquer what's not right with the leadership. And right now, not that I want to be political. I don't. I just want the people to know that they matter in this yeah. universe that we have. We're just a speck in the scheme of things, but you know, we matter. And our voices matter. And we have to guide where our country is going, because we're losing our values. And, if you don't open up, you're letting just a few people take those values away and destroy your planet.
Did you ever have a desire to run for office yourself, make a difference that way?
No. I have no desire for that kind of leadership. I just want to be a voice out there amongst the people, helping to make things better. You know, when I work in clubs and in performing arts centers, I always look into people's eyes, the ones I can see, and I always look up. I want to see their eyes, and I look for people who might not be so happy or whatever. And I just want to bring joy to the heart of everybody,
yeah.
if that's possible. I ask God to let me be his vehicle to spread his message.
Well, one way to spread a message, of course, would be to get you to tour the country again and do some concerts. So I'll just ask, I don't even know the answer to this, but any plans, any hopes, any thoughts about saying, you know what? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm hoping. Yeah. Most definitely. I will be out there again. Yeah.
All right. Any thoughts?
I don't do it a lot like some people do it constantly. But I'm hoping that maybe I'm not out there so constant. It'll be a better turnout.
well, look, Cher's been doing farewell concerts for, I think, 20 years. So, I mean,
I know.
you could start a decade of those. What do you love best, Roz? I mean, being in the studio recording or being on stage with that, you just said you catch people's eyes in the audience. What yeah. turns you on the most? Is it live performance, studio, Broadway? What turns you on?
I love every aspect of it. I love right now what I'm doing in the studio, because it's the first time I'm producing with my producer alone, no record label telling me what to do, how to do it, and giving their opinion. It's just us. And I have more control of what I'm doing, which I love. And we're having a blast because we're so coming from the heart and soul. And we're so kindred to what I want to say. We're so in agreement. It's just a beautiful experience. I'm loving being in the studio right now.
What is your style?
I love being on stage. I love being on stage. Sharing with the people, looking. I talk to my audience. I talk to them. I have conversations with them. I want them to be part of me and me part of them. You know, once when I was did a concert in Brooklyn at the Brooklyn College
yeah.
at the Performing Arts Center, at the end of the show, I was out in the lobby signing autographs, and this older gentleman came up to me and he said, "Can I give you a hug?" I said, "Of course." So he gave me a hug and he said, "Who needs a doctor when we have you?"
I love
it. See, I mean, that made me smile with my heart.
That's a good line from a song, too. It's so important to be able to do that. I wanted to ask you a bit about your style when you're in the recording studio. Are you collaborative? Are you more of a, I'll just use the phrase, control freak? But I don't mean that negatively.
No, I'm collaborative. I'm very collaborative. I like input from my producer or an arranger. I don't want an overbutton because I come in with certain ideas myself, but we work together to make it the best it can be. But I love to be collaborative. You know, there's always something to learn, Paul. Every day of my life, there is something to learn to make us better in what we do in our work, to make us better as people, to make us better as a community, as a country, all over the world. I'm in for the run, and I just want to make things better. So to me, collaboration, giving credit for that collaboration, is a must. It's a must.
If things were
just like the gentleman yeah. who did the video is from Mexico. He's been here a number of years. He doesn't know any other country, but he was very kindred to what I wanted to say and what I was saying in my yeah. song. I'm very sensitive to it. And he did an incredible video to go with my song.
I'm curious, if the world gets to the point, let's put us in 2021, and let's just say you're mm-hmm. pleased with how the country's being run and what's going on, and it's a different world and all of that. What kind of music will you record then? Or will it still be the same kind of thing? Or will you say, no, there might be a shift in my message?
Well, I don't think you ever shift the message of love, do you? That's an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
But you might not sing Save the Country.
No, I might sing other songs that are love songs. I have love songs on my album, too. I look album. I'm giving away my age.
That's all right. It made sense to me.
In my recordings, I do love songs as well, and one of them is in my show, my show that I do now, and it's a medley of It Only Takes a Moment, two Jerry Herman songs, and
sure.
Kiss Her Now, and it's like my 11 o'clock song. And I've also put together a Brazilian medley with Look of Love and The Island.
Yeah.
I'm in many areas. This is just, this few songs about that are kind of more aimed at the country of the people, it's timely. You know, when I did it before, it was timely, but not as much as it is now needed. You know what I mean?
Well, it's one of the things that grabbed my attention when I came across this recording, and I just thought how powerful it is to listen to today.
Yeah. You know what? It's that because I went in the studio and I said to Stefan, I said, this is not about my singing voice. This is about the message this has to carry to the people of this nation and the people around the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have a voice and come together and stop being hateful and stop having fear. You know, if people were all treated right, there wouldn't be violence. There wouldn't be. These are coming from people who are on the low end of the stick, who are suffering, who don't feel that they're recognized or given equality.
And some believe the message is coming from the top, which makes it okay to treat people that way. That's one of the issues.
And it's not. It's not. I think I'm very disappointed in what's going on even in Congress. I they've lost their voice for the people. You know, I don't know.
That's why I asked if you want to run.
I said to you, no. I don't want, I just want to be a voice.
Senator Kind.
Huh?
Senator Kind.
Senator Kind. I think my sister would be better than me, but, you know, it's like, this is what I want in our leadership. I want compassion, kindness, and integrity.
Well, it's beautiful. I could talk to you for an hour, but with that kind of phrase, it's like, oh, what a beautiful place. I'm kind of hoping our conversation has made you feel like when we part, you're going to say, you know what, I really do need to do this national tour soon, and I'm coming to Chicago.
Oh, I will. Believe me, I will. I'll start booking. I just want to get a few more things done in the studio and to only add to it. And I want to spread. I want to spread love. I want to heal people's hearts, even if it's one-on-one. Even if it's I'm having a conversation one-on-one with somebody, I hope that I can touch their heart in a good way. God granted me with empathy and a sensitivity that goes with me everywhere I go, Paul.
Well, if you end up in Chicago, not only will I be in the front row. Listen, if I throw your name around, maybe I'll get a free drink at the bar.
I'll buy you a drink.
But for now, I want people to know they can download Save the Country. It is really such, I just keep listening. I'll be honest with you. I've heard it over and over and over and over again. It's at CD Baby. It's at Amazon, iTunes. I'm too old to tell you all the places that one downloads music. But I'm sure young people listening know where to get it.
They know everything, don't they? I'm still technologically challenged. I don't even have a post enough to do things.
Well, wait a minute. As long as you don't have a flip phone, I think you're okay.
No, I don't have a flip phone.
And I'm going to keep an eye open as to all the listeners are for your new singles as they come out in the coming months. Keep an eye open for this extended play CD album. You and I, we'll call it an album that will come out hopefully later this year. And when you do announce your next tour, I absolutely want you to come back and join me, and we'll talk about it and talk about all that's planned for that. Because
I look forward to it, Paul. I look forward to it.
It excites me.
You've been a joy to talk with.
You too. We're going to go out playing a little bit more of Save the Country because I want people to hear it and then go download it and buy it. All right. Rosalind Kind, thank you so much. Here's a little bit more of Save the Country.
Come on, come on, children. There's a king at the Glory River and the precious king for the people to say. Babes in the blinking. I got fury in my soul, fury gone.
Yeah, you know that beat, right?
Yeah, I see WGN likes it.
Yeah, it's a WGN kind of beat. It's a disco beat. And I just wanted you to hear that, have my listeners hear that as we come off of one interview and get into talking to the man, no, as far as I'm concerned, the disco king. but if you have seen the PBS special about his life, it is called The Disco King of Skokie. So that's the way you want to find it. But that being said, Kerry Wyman, you and I kind of grew up together. We're the same age, yeah, a little older, but we're the same age, went to the same school and all that. And I don't know what the heck I was doing at night, but while I was sitting around reading books, you were becoming the disco king, making an entire career out of disco and really put it on the maps. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. And I remember us being at the PTO meetings together.
Yeah. I mean, it's just all these years together of work. I don't know how I didn't know what you were doing, but let's start at the beginning. Talk to folks about the, first of all, I mean, disco was around. You didn't bring disco to the planet, but you did see it as something that needed to be shared and grown, and that's what you did.
There were so many aspects to disco back in the day, but what I would say my contribution was, and I didn't do it to be the one of the pioneers of EDM. I didn't do it for other reasons except that I wanted to make a business where I didn't have to have a boss. And there were a few of us that went to Niles North back in the day that didn't like having bosses. So I started a business where I wanted to work for myself, make people very happy, and I saw a little hole in the market. When I started, nobody was DJing parties.
And how old were, you?
When I first got the idea, I was 19. By the time I booked my first party, I was 21, which is at Northwestern, by the way.
Yeah.
And it was called Sigma Chi, was the name of the fraternity, but because of where I came from, I made a mistake and called it Sigma Chi.
Okay, there are listeners getting that. Some might not be, but I get it.
Some might not be, and I could explain it later. But what I did was there were DJs that were mostly in the gay clubs. There were DJs that were on the radio. But if you wanted music at your party, if you wanted music at your bar mitzvah, wedding, high school graduation back when I started, you had one choice, and it was bands. There weren't DJs doing parties. There was like maybe a sock hop kind of guy with one turntable.
Right.
But my idea was that I would take two turntables, stick them in a box, which I designed, and I would put on a tuxedo. And by doing this, I could make music, this kind of music, available to everybody's party for a price they could afford, because back then orchestras were $5,000-$10,000, and that was a lot of money back in the late 70s. And you also needed to have something that would keep everybody busy. So my idea was I would come into a party, bring all my sound, all my lights, and I would have two helpers with me. They would be the guys who would set everything up. But they weren't done after they set everything up. Back in our day, we might have called them helpers or assistants. Today, they call them dancers, because what I had my guys do, and you could ask David Hochberg about this, was once they changed their clothes after the equipment was set up, they would come back and help me, some of it be security of the kids, dance with the kids. At 13 years old, when we were doing these kids' parties,
yeah,
it was a very socially awkward time. If you can remember when you were doing your eighth grade graduation, how much taller the girls were than the guys. You know, and then they dance close together. So
I can't even remember my eighth grade graduation, but okay.
Okay, yeah, it's a long time ago. But that's what I did. It was, I didn't realize that I might have been the first DJ to do that. And I made a large business out of it, did it for many years. And I made a website about what I did.
Yeah.
And it was Hollywood that came to me and said, Kerry, we did all our research. We did these wiki searches and all this stuff, and you might have been the first DJ to do this. But I never thought of it like that. I thought of it like I came up with a business where I made everybody happy and got paid for it and didn't have to have a boss except for the client.
Did you view this, Kerry, as something that, you know, this would be your career? Or when you were a young 19-year-old, was it a way, you know, I was working as a movie theater usher and then a manager over at the Old Orchard Theater just down the street from where your parties
were. I remember.
Were, sure.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's what we were doing. We all had jobs in various places like that. Did you look and said, this is a career for me? Or did you see it as, no, I'm going to do this for a little bit, maybe pay my way through college, and then I'm going to go do something else?
What I saw was, I was done with college. I was looking for, like, if you could imagine being a football player, you got the ball and you're looking for a hole in the line to start running. I saw this as an example. As a matter of fact, if you can remember back, way back in the day when they had movie drive-in theaters,
sure.
There was a Sunset that was on McCormick.
Totally. Oh, absolutely.
We would sneak in there. Remember, you put all your friends in the trunk and pull in so they didn't have to pay.
Look, I was an idiot. I actually probably paid legitimately.
Yeah, you were a goody-goody.
Yeah.
But that's another story. So I went to see, it was called Thank God It's Friday, that movie. And when I was there, I saw a radio station, WGCI, set up a table with two turntables from the radio station with a mixer in the middle, and you would not believe how many cords were everywhere. But I saw people get up and dance to that before the movie.
Really?
I said, I can do this. And I got to be very good friends with the guy that owned something called Disco Van, Terry Hedeman. He was a big person in the Boys Town community. And we worked together, and I ended up taking it so many steps further where I was designing my own cases. I made a market for something that wasn't there before. So to answer your question, was this something I thought I would want to do? Not at first, because I tried a bunch of things while I was DJing, and then what I realized was I was making money at DJing, but this other stuff was more like experimentation. I tried to sell satellite dishes. I loved everything that had to do with TV, and there was something called On TV that was in Chicago. So the only thing, though, back then that was making me money was a DJ thing. So I said, I'm going to do this one thing, and I'm going to do it very well. And that's how all this other stuff happened.
Did it occur to you, because I know you worked with documentarian Ken Goldstein to put the show together that I watched a few times on PBS, and it looks like you have like hundreds of hours of video that you saved from the moment you were born all the way through the 90s. I mean, were you thinking back then, or did you just take a lot of video? Because back in those days, I don't know that people were making video. You know, today we use our phone, we tape everything. We weren't doing that in the 70s.
Whoa, you just stumbled upon a huge nugget of information. When I was trying to put this together, I went and I looked at Getty. I looked at all the archives that were around in Chicago, the TV museum, the Chicago Broadcast Museum, all the stuff that you know about, and there was nothing. And what I realized was I have 100 hours of video footage.
Yeah.
I have, right now, 2,000 digitalized pages of everything from 1978 to the 2000s that other people don't have. And the reason I have all that, my wife is very glad I didn't throw all this stuff out, which she wanted me to throw it out in the beginning. Well, I have
because well, back then it was, what, 8mm, 16mm? What did you have it on?
In 1979, after I decided I was going to be doing only DJs, I started a video company called Video Experience.
Mm-hmm.
And we did corporate video productions. And what I would have my guys do, since, you know, at the parties, people would pay to have a video of a wedding, let's say. I would have my different crews, and by the way, it started on Beta before it went to VHS.
Yeah.
That's how long I was in it. And on their way to every party, I would have them shoot out the window. So when we would give the tape back to the people who paid for us to video, like if it was a corporate function, we did all the grand openings of Chicago health clubs, stuff like that, all the muffler shops.
Right.
So we had all this footage from Eden's driving into the city, from the John Hancock looking out, that you could not get, because the only people that had cameras were the TV stations, and the only shots they got were the ones they put in the news stories. So I have quite a lot of footage, a lot more than you saw in the documentary.
Well, I'm sure you'd have to. You get that sense. And I remember, I know that you did a lot of work over at the Hyatt. It was all we called it, the Purple Hotel. They knocked. Although I may have something you don't have. I actually have a purple brick from the Purple Hotel, so I don't know if you can match that. But I know you worked there a lot. And I have to ask you, when you were doing all this, what was your reaction when, was that Steve Dahl who had that, you know, Death of Disco Night or whatever that was called, when they burned all the records? Did you look at this and say, what are you doing? Or did you yourself move on from disco in time to other brands of music?
Never. I was really mad at Steve Dahl for that. I saw something that became a huge social change because of that. Think about what and it's hard to think about what it was like before, because we were just coming out of high school and disco was getting very big in the late 70s. Right as Steve Dahl did that, if you can remember, there was in Chicago, there was like a discotheque on every block, let's say.
Right.
Every bar was putting in dance floors. And the biggest club back then, of course, in Chicago was Faces, which I ended up working for 10 years, and it was probably the best 10 years of my life. And everybody was on that dance floor. If you looked at the dance floor back then, gay, straight, black, white, Hispanic, everybody was on the same dance floor, dancing to the same music, having the same amount of fun. What I didn't like about what Steve Dahl did was it kind of took some of the people out of that market. And then it turned disco into something that wasn't as beautiful, wonderful, as fashionable as it really was. And it's funny that today I have a Facebook page, Kerry Wyman Presents, and on the page I put lots of information about what disco was like to let people know what it was like who weren't there. And still people put up that thing, disco sucks, worst thing that ever happened. And I think to myself, every time, I don't engage when somebody does that, but I think to myself, this guy is in his 60s saying disco sucks. And I'm thinking, you need to get a life.
Something your wife should have probably said to you, but go ahead.
So, do you want to hear some of my social thoughts about what Steve did?
I want to move on to that because I really want to focus in on you, although you can share a critical one. But I wanted to kind of say, so fill folks in on when we know Kerry Wyman Entertainment. Where's Kerry today? What is Kerry doing today?
Well, I got into the nightclub business, and then after I sold the last one, I ended up making this website. I thought I was done. I thought I was retired, which I say that loosely because I knew something would probably come around, because I don't look old, I don't feel old, I don't act old, according to my kids, because I have young kids. I have a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old.
They'll keep you young.
I started really late, and I thought I would just be around for them, and after the website hit and this documentary came out, there's books in the works, two of them. There's, I'm looking for a national sponsor currently to take that documentary to all the PBS markets, and I'm developing a script for a series based on the Disco King of Skokie.
Oh, how incredible. Now, when I introduced you, I said, you know, yes, the PBS special is called The Disco King of Skokie, and we should just say the documentary on you is called The Disco King of Skokie, but I broadened it out. Is that a fair broadening for me to do, to see you as a bigger than just the guy who was doing this all in Skokie? I mean, because the message spread.
Oh, of course. What I did was really all over the Midwest. But at the height of it, I had an office in L.A. I was doing parties in Boca every other weekend. I was down Texas, San Antonio, Dallas. We were doing functions everywhere. So when I was at a Billboard convention and I was introduced and I walked up on stage and they said, Kerry Wyman Entertainment, a national ongoing business. And it struck me that I was national. A lot of people think that the DJ thing that I did, which you now have DJs at, circumcision ceremonies, you have them at fifth grade birthday parties, you have them everywhere. DJs are at every party.
Well, because it's competition now. Everybody's got to do something for everything.
Right. And all the DJs that are in Chicago now work for me. And then I call those guys disciples. There were hundreds of them. And I'm very proud of all the guys that I train that work for me, that started their own businesses after me. But a lot of people think that it came from New York, and it didn't. It started right here in Chicago.
Yeah. Which is why all the interest and the focus on your work. The future of the – now, again, I've seen the documentary on PBS, but for folks who are listening to us and saying, I missed it, whatever, is there a place – I don't think – is there a place for them to see it? I know it'll come back in a variety of things in life going on, but for somebody that wants to check it out now, is it available anywhere?
Not now.
Okay.
It was on PBS, and it was on demand for a week with PBS. And it's such a special story, and almost 50,000 people saw it, that, and I had requests from all over the country, from all the other markets, of people wanting to see it in their market. So that's what I'm looking to do.
So
to
that
show
may
it
happen.
There. Well, but if they go to the DiscoKingOfSkokie.com, they can see a very long trailer of it. That'll give you the flavor of what it was.
Perfect.
Because it's very hard to understand what it was like in the 80s, before cell phones.
Right. Well, and of course, for me, again, as I watched the documentary, I was sort of, you know, various scenes. I'm looking for people I knew. I thought maybe I would even show up in somewhere. Who knew? because we knew each other back then. But I certainly recognize so many of the scenes that you showed and places that you showed because we both grew up in Skokie, Illinois. And so for people that want to contact you, Kerry, or have questions or want to chat about this and all that, how do they get to you?
Any of my websites. The best way probably is Facebook, but Kerry Wyman Presents on Facebook, kerrywyman.com, and the DiscoKingOfSkokie.com.
Well, I don't know that I have a right to be proud of you because we're peers, but I couldn't be more proud of my school colleague and friend who went on to do such great things. And like I said, this was all happening and I didn't even know. I was too busy trying to, you know, sneak in the movies or something. I don't know what I was ushering the movie, eating free popcorn. You know, by the way, there was a rule in the theater. If you were not allowed to eat free candy unless the box was dented. So many a box got dented accidentally that allowed us to open it up. It's a side story.
See, you had a wild side.
I had that real wild side. Absolutely. Check out Kerry Wyman. Congratulations on all your success. I will be looking forward to the books and the specials and all the stuff that will come of it and look forward to talking about it. And, you know, I picked a different disco song. I thought we would go out with another disco song that maybe you like, too. Is that okay?
Please.
With my thanks to Kerry Wyman, here's a little bit of some special disco music from our past.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes and tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.